I'm very happy now to welcome Pam Roy. She's executive director of Farm to Table and a member of the Santa Fe Food Policy Council. Lynn Walters is executive director of Cooking with Kids and is on the Santa Fe Food Policy Council, which we are here to talk about today. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
So the Food Policy Council has put out a report called Planning for Santa Fe's Food Future, Querencia, a Story of Food, Farming, and Friends. This has been underway for quite a while. What is it?
It's really looking at assessing our situation with food in Santa Fe. We've done, for about 3 years, we've worked on a food assessment in a number of quarters of Santa Fe to look at what are the needs of our community related to food. Of course, the assessment is not thorough. We did not survey every individual in Santa Fe, but there were focus groups, surveys, observations, you know, visits in many quarters to just really look at the needs of our community. And the food plan is really laid out in three parts, getting food, learning about food, and growing food. We were trying to be succinct.
Now, getting food, let's talk about that first, is, I mean, harder for some people than others. Access to food, and above all, access to fresh and healthy food, can be a challenge, even here in Santa Fe, which is a relatively small city.
Yes, it's true. And there are certain areas of town that have more challenges than others.
Right, exactly. So one of the things that one of the reasons why the Food Policy Council even exists as a group, so we're a body of 13 members that are appointed by the city and the county to work together on these issues and to have developed a plan, a list of policy priorities that link to what are the things that are happening in our community. And so the idea of getting food is, as Lynn said, you know, Santa Fe has a fairly high poverty rate and food insecurity rate. Our state is one of the, I hate to say it, the bottom of the rung, basically. We are one of the most food insecure states, which means that people on a daily basis, about a fifth of our population, may be food insecure. They may not have a meal that they know they're going to get in a day. So we really wanted to address that aspect of it. And then to build on that, what are the things that we can do to change that in our community? And some of the work that Lynn has been doing and we've been doing with Farm to Table as well addresses that in what we call a more systemic. So you look at how can we do things in schools and institutions where we have a population of people, right? So you've got hundreds or tens of thousands of people that are being served, like, for instance, in our schools with our school kids, and then being able to build and work on some policies that are really about how, for instance, our young people access food, learn about it, and Lynn will talk more about the learning aspect and how this report builds on much of the work that she has really envisioned for our schools and helping kids really understand where their food comes from. And then really the balance of that, which is where do we get our food? So many people think, you know, and you ask young people too, and our generation now, where does food come from? A grocery store, you know, that
the refrigerator.
The refrigerator, exactly. Yeah. And that really the backbone of food is our farming community. So part of this addresses how do we really, really help support our farming community, not only in the city of Santa Fe, the county of Santa Fe, but in the region, and how do we connect connect between local to more regional food system.
There are a lot of different issues going on with that. One of them is that it's hard to make a living as a farmer. Another is that a lot of arable land gets developed instead of staying in agriculture or going into agriculture. How do you address each of those things?
Right. Well, I think one thing in terms of policies, which the Food Policy Council is focused on in terms of recommending policies and educating the public and our city and county legislators is that if we can really look at the policies around land development in our community, that can go a long way to preserve and encourage having urban gardening, urban farming, or in the county, how people can farm, and showing that we value that through our policies. For a while now, there's been an interest in looking at urban farming, and there are several small urban farms in Santa Fe, and the city has been wonderful in terms of developing the community gardens. That's been a great effort, and schools have done in varying times a huge amount or a little with school gardening, but how to put those pieces together and in kind of a coherent way address, you know, show that these are our priorities, make it work economically. That's part of this effort to really create more conversation around it and look at what are possible solutions as things exist now and looking towards the future.
Right, and to build on that, we actually have a land use subcommittee with the Food Policy Council. So this plan, as we move it forward, will be looking at the urban agriculture landscape, as Lynn was talking about it, and how it connects to our county. Mm-hmm. So our county has a sustainable growth management plan that was passed last year, and working on the agricultural zoning part of that. The city and our Mayor Gonzalez is very interested in the urban agriculture ordinance. So our subcommittee is going to really do its best to combine and really get the city and the county to discuss these issues together as we move forward. And there's some really great work being done at the county and the city level right now that I think is going to position the policy recommendations in this report in a way that we're really going to be able to advance some of these issues and clarify what a lot of community members ask a lot of questions. Is there an ordinance around, you know, urban gardening, and what can I do and what can't I do? Our hope also is that we provide some new ways of doing things, that we encourage and provide potentially enhancements to programs instead of creating punitive initiatives, which sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. But there's some great work going around the country that are good examples for us as well. So,
like what? Like, what do you mean by new ways of doing things?
Well, for instance, a couple of things. In the county, providing incentives for people to grow food for themselves and locally, whether that be a family who's growing a garden, you might have a little tax incentive for that, you know, in the sense of on your property taxes. There is a tax exemption for agriculture, mm-hmm. but it's framed pretty strictly. In an urban area, people might receive an incentive for having water harvesting that's going to feed a garden, you know, whether it be a community garden or their own garden. I mean, those would be some examples. But the idea is to help people think creatively, give them the tools and the ability, you know, even by ordinance, to do that, too. Yeah.
And this is not a specific thing that we laid out in the food plan, but in our discussion of growing food, we do talk about, the food plan discusses community gardens and school gardens, you know, separately. But given various challenges with water, security, et cetera, with school gardens, recently I've been thinking, and based on models elsewhere, as Pam was alluding to, that one thing Santa Fe might consider is community school gardens, mm-hmm. where if there was adjacent land to a school, that perhaps the city could provide, that then school children could also participate in that garden, mm-hmm. Because the access is there. Right. Don't know, but I just want to bring that up as one idea. And so there are some, you know, there are some specific ideas, but more general areas of discussion for people to educate themselves and really look at, well, where do I fit in with this? And what do I do that either can support some of the ideas laid out here or ways to get involved, you know, to just make our food situation more equitable in Santa Fe.
And I think the other thing, building on what Lynn was just sharing, is in this and in other communities in this food policy plan, joint what they call joint use agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the policy piece of a very practical solution to things that, like Lynn was sharing, where a city or a county or school district can actually create what they call a joint use agreement to public space or to extend the hours of a playground beyond the time that school is in so that families can be there, they can garden. I think Gonzales Elementary School, I think, is one of those, is it Gonzales, that has a garden, and I've seen kids and families out there at 7 o'clock in the evening. And that idea of using a what's paid for by all of us as taxpayers, space, in an agreement, but that also really provides that access. And there's a really wonderful organization called the Prevention Institute out of California who've done incredible policy work on these issues. The more you create spaces like that, the more you minimize, you maximize the ability for kids and families to get out and play and to access things in a safe manner. You create safer environments by sometimes the simplest policies that are really about creating access to places.
Yeah.
You know, built environment, as we call it. And school
healthy
gardens,
healthy environments, too.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So it's all connected.
Now, let's talk for a moment about, I mean, if you've got a community garden and the community is growing radishes and spinach and whatever, does every person have his or her own plot? Is it, how does it work?
It can be done in a number of ways. I mean, there are community gardens that where people do have their own plot. And there are gardens where people decide in different ways that, well, together we want to grow this section of tomatoes and figure out some way to share it.
Right.
And
I
think
because if I did that, I might eat all of them.
You might. And then your,
and then my
your
neighbors
might
unhappy.
Be
unhappy.
Yes, that could be. But maybe you have a neighbor that only really likes corn. And so... Mm. I think there are a number of ways to do it, and that's part of, I think, the creative aspect of figuring out different ways for people to work together around food.
Right. Yeah. And we found when we did this report, actually, that some of the members of community gardens were actually gardening more than one garden, or growing food in mm-hmm. multiple gardens. What we didn't do is pry into people's lives as to exactly why necessarily, but it provided a window of just to learn a little bit more that sometimes food access means really having to do just that much more. You know, having more than one garden, you might have multiple families. It's, you know, and it links to other things as well. So it was just an interesting, you know, outcome from the research that for me was unexpected.
We're talking to Pam Roy and Lynn Walters of the Santa Fe Food Policy Council. Now, one of the things I think that happens if you are hanging out with a lot of people who garden is that you can kind of forget that many, many of us, probably the vast majority, don't garden, didn't learn to garden, haven't had good experiences with gardening. And, I mean, what it would take to get me to grow my own food would be like moving a mountain. But with young kids, you can maybe get them to start learning that gardening is part of our lives. I mean, is that part of the plan?
Definitely. I think or at least I can speak for myself, and I think the rest of us, we're not, I think, with education about gardening or cooking or anything related to food, not necessarily trying to get kids to become farmers or to become chefs or to become food policy council people, but to really learn about the sources of their food, to empower them to become self-reliant, and to be able to choose for themselves once they understand kind of how these connections work. I remember years ago, I was working in a school with cooking with kids with a special needs class, and we were just going to do a little bit of planting outside their classroom. And for many of those kids, getting down to the ground and feeling like that was okay to get dirty was a major barrier,
right?
Because they had so been told, no, don't get dirty, don't play in the dirt, don't do this, it's not good. And so just like being okay with, well, this is dirt, things grow in the dirt, this is kind of fun, you know, was a major step. But then really seeing, I mean, there is so much truth to the more experience and connection you have with something, the more interested you often are. For example, if kids are growing carrots or if help to plant them, or even if they didn't help to plant them and they get to dig them up, they're so excited. It's like, wow, this is really amazing. When my kids were little and we had huge gardens and we grew Jerusalem artichokes, which many people don't know what they are. They're, you know, they're a tuber and they're very prolific as long as they get water. In this part of the country, they're not a weed because they don't get water unless you provide it. But they were the best crunchy snack. You know, dig them up and you can dig them up all winter. And wow, what a great thing. So when kids have that kind of experience, or as I was saying, get to dig up carrots and then wash them off and eat them, it's like, wow, that was really amazing. And then when you can extend that and they get to be in a place where they can cook food and put it together, whether it's familiar, unfamiliar, they're so excited and proud, because kids like to do things and take care of themselves. And I think as adults, we kind of, many of us forget about that realm and that excitement.
And the idea that you don't have to buy everything you eat.
Yeah.
You plant it,
right,
and grow it yourself. Exactly. You go out into your yard and a chunk of dinner is right there.
Right. But you also, I think, a place where somehow humans tend to go is it's got to be all or nothing. And I think with the kind of amazing food system that we've created that has many, many outcomes, some really wonderful and some detrimental, the thing that I think we can do as intelligent beings is look at that food system and be able to decide for ourselves, well, we might be able to grow a small amount of food, you know, if we're able. And maybe we're not. Maybe we're too busy, or we don't have land and we're in an apartment or barely able to make it. But that could be an option at some point. And going to a regular supermarket could be an option. The farmer's market. There are a lot of things, but knowledge is power.
Right, exactly. And I think what Lynn, I mean, and of course what Lynn's done with the Cooking with Kids program here in Santa Fe is it's a champion program. It's the example of what we would love to see in all schools, so that our children, this generation, will live longer than us, you know. I mean, that's part of it.
And healthier.
And healthier, exactly. And so going to that was part of it, the initiative around this whole food plan was, what are those ways, those pathways, like Cooking with Kids, that helps young people in a center of education to have a curriculum. Lynn's put together an amazing curriculum that provides them experiential learning, really literally, and still, it still, you know, is in the path of the school's curriculum and that kind of thing, so that they're able to learn experientially around food, translating it to the garden in the school, if the school has it, the backyard as well. And then as we ripple that out, one of the things that Lynn, over a decade ago, had the vision was, how do you link that the educational piece to what ends up on the plate in the school meal cafeteria. So part of the food plan is really to support school foods getting, you know, the best options on the plates. So Lynn's vision was to see that it's locally grown and that we really support our farming economy and our farmers who are right here in our own backyard, here in northern New Mexico, in particular for Santa Fe's area. And so literally the Santa Fe School District has been a champion in purchasing New Mexico-grown fresh fruits and vegetables. And we, as actually both of our organizations working on this together, started that about 10 years ago, and now it's really ramping up.
It's been actually...
more than that.
I know.
I didn't want to say that.
And with the New Mexico Department of Agriculture support, really a lot of people working together on legislation and then on funding and programming. And it is growing slowly, but it is happening. And that's very exciting.
Well, and a couple of things, too, is that one is, I mean, this plan supports, as we move into our 2015 legislative session, it supports the New Mexico-grown fresh fruits and vegetables for schools, school meals initiative, requesting that the state invest in our school meal program specifically for fruits and vegetables grown here in New Mexico by our farmers so our young people can really eat the best. It links up policy-wise with the federal school meal program. And we've all, as policy, you know, even though we're programmatic people in our organizations, we see the links to the policies. And, you know, Lynn brought up an important example around school gardens. So there are school cafeterias who feel that they can't use the school garden food in the cafeteria because they have created some rule around that. And there aren't rules necessarily. It's about that food being safe. But it's a little bit like the
kids.
There
aren't rules that prevent it, is
right,
what you mean.
No rules that prevent them from doing that. And so part of our work, working on policy issues, is to kind of dispel those myths around that. And at the same time is try and create policies that create open door, also create new opportunities. So to get farmers' produce in the schools, we work with the Department of Agriculture, the Cooperative Extension Service, as Lynn mentioned, on training programs that help farmers understand what are some of the requirements when it comes to food safety, how I harvest things, and package them and then get them to those schools or other places as well. But so there's all those links all the way back to that farmer and then all the way, of course, to all of us who, you know, really want access to food.
Let's talk for a moment about urban agriculture, water harvesting, and gray water. Can we use gray water right now? Can I convert my house to use gray water?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe that we'll have to ask someone that question and get back to you on that one.
Okay.
I think there are some restrictions around gray water itself.
I think there are.
Yeah.
I think we do need more information about that, but I think there are standards and criteria for developing gray water systems. My understanding is they are allowed, but you do have to meet certain criteria.
And I think the other piece of it is, it's being looked at not only at the city, but at the state level, to allow for rainwater harvesting. Senator Worth actually had a bill at the state level this last session that would have been a little bit like, it would have been about harvesting, but being able to get a tax credit for doing that.
So you can harvest right now. I mean, there are places where you can't. There are places,
I think,
in Arizona
you're prohibited.
Collect the water off your own roof, you're breaking the law.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and part of it is that you're not allowed, and part of the challenge is you're supposed to allow water to run downstream. So you're not allowed to restrict water from your neighbor that's flowing. And so there's some discrepancies there. Mm-hmm. And I know with the state legislation that Senator Worth was working on, the city of Albuquerque had a challenge around rainwater. There were challenges because very urban areas collecting water off of roofs, larger urban areas having a distinctly different distinctly different issues around that compared to a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just interesting. It depends on...
Like where you're not allowed to have your water go onto someone's
That's
property.
Right. That's right.
So it is dependent right. on the environment.
Right. Yeah. We'll get back to you on that issue, though. That's a complicated one. But it has to do with, certainly, the food plan. Absolutely.
We're talking to Pam Roy and Lynn Walters from the Santa Fe Food Policy Council. And I want to get back to the issue of hunger. I mean, we have people going to bed hungry. We've got people with food insecurity in large numbers in not only our state, but in our city, in our county.
Mm-hmm. We do. And it's been, I think it's become a growing problem, although for many years, until there was a light shined on it, there probably has been more than we were aware of. But I think going from a largely rural economy to a more urban economy in the, you know, last decades, that's really changed people's relationship to food and people's food access. You know, along with that, of course, there's been the rise of corporate food companies and technological advancements in preserving food and manufactured food that's made it, you know, it's made our relationship to food further away from its source generally. And then I think with hunger and obesity, which certainly are closely linked
I know,
now.
It's, nobody understands this. They're two sides of the same coin.
They are, and I think from what I understand from the research, because now we have made that fast, cheap, and easy food more accessible, especially in urban areas, including, you know, areas of Santa Fe where grocery stores that actually sell fruits and vegetables and other fresh foods are not accessible to people due to transportation issues, due to economic issues as well. Those things have really just increased then or supported the rise of obesity. Less safe places to play outside, you know, less physical activity and less people cooking, using food from, you know, from their natural state. All of that has contributed together to this rise of obesity, not to mention even some of the research that led us down the path of low fat, you know, which led to, you know, high sugar consumption. So there are all these sort of strangely interrelated factors. I would argue that knowing how to cook, of course, I believe in cooking. I'm a cooking person, teaching cooking, which our organization does. But I think cooking and knowing about your food, being able to garden, as we were talking about, just understanding the food cycles is one way to increase food access. Of course, you still need food. If you have nothing but potato chips and Coke, you know, it's really hard to create a healthy meal. But if you do have those skills and you have interest and preferences for healthy foods, without feeling like, oh, I'm not getting the good stuff, but I am getting the good stuff, then you can do so much more with less.
And in the food plan, one of the things that, and Lynn was just relating this to how people access food. So one of our priorities in this food plan is to work with the city of Santa Fe on their bus routes. Because what we found is in the south side of Santa Fe, where we have a higher part of our population that do not have cars but need to get to the grocery store, if we just work with the city on changing bus routes and bus route times so that it provides more opportunity for people to access the grocery stores when it's important for them to be able to access the grocery stores.
Right.
That begins to move us towards a solution of creating access when people are less mobile.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly see it in the city of Santa Fe, definitely in the county. It's a huge issue here in New Mexico. We have people who travel as much as 140 miles round trip to get to a grocery store. That's out on the Navajo Nation. population in particular, but in other rural areas. So it's something we really need to be, and we have a great opportunity working with the city and the county on that here.
Something that I've always wondered about and have tried to do the math on a couple of times, and it has to do with water and land and everything, but is, can New Mexico, let's say New Mexico were to become its own nation and there were four walls around this rectangular state or whatever, we had nothing coming in, nothing going out, could we feed ourselves?
That's a great question. And actually, we would have to change. We would have to really encourage more production of fruits and vegetables in this state. That's why it's great getting them in the schools, because it is a transition farmers are making, building into that market. Currently, New Mexico's agriculture sector, if we look at everything that's grown in the state, it's our fourth largest economic sector. Yet we export 98% of what we grow and produce here in New Mexico. We export that across that border, right? Across, out of the state. But a majority of that is, actually more than a quarter of it is milk. So milk is very fluid. And so it is exported out of the state in tanker trucks. We import most of our milk back. And in fact,
That's
of the milk
crazy.
We drink is from California, actually. So it's kind of interesting when you look at the whole thing. We do the same thing with beef, which is traditional. So traditional ranching is traditional. Second largest agriculture sector. Much of our beef goes out of state and we've actually traced that. It may take up to 3,000 miles to get the meat back on a counter in our grocery store in New Mexico if we don't do more to create infrastructure. So that's one of the big issues for us here in New Mexico, is the infrastructure. The other piece of it is that because of the dairy industry moving into New Mexico over the last 15 years, it meant that some of our traditional fruit and vegetable farmers actually transitioned to alfalfa. We used to be, chili was our number one crop in New Mexico. Alfalfa is our number one crop now.
Which is a very water-intensive crop.
It's very water. Our two most water-intensive crops are alfalfa and pecans. Pecans is also one of our major industries now. We export our pecans to China, a lot of them. And what do we import from China? Pinon nuts.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is, traditionally, growing up here, and we pick pinon nuts all the time. So it's just, we have to see this in a little bit different light. So the work that Lynn's doing, what we've been doing at Farm to Table, and like we said, with agencies and other organizations across the state to try and keep a little bit more of that food at home, create those markets. Farmers markets have been a great way of doing that.
Educating people at farmers markets.
That's right.
La Familia has partnered with us on some of that.
Right. And we have also, our farmers markets have been able to integrate the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, aka the food stamp program, into farmers markets again, yet creating more access. The Women, Infant, and Children Farmers Market Nutrition Program, and then there's a program for seniors as well. For low income or those who are nutritionally at risk, families who are nutritionally at risk, to be able to access more local fruits and vegetables and foods. So those are policies. Those are federal and state programs that have been developed over the last 20 years and or built on to create access around food.
And there's so much more to talk about. It's almost time to go. But for example, changing people's habits to the point where they are used to eating a different kind of food before, which is what you're trying to do with cooking with kids. And it relates to other kinds of policies, too. When you have a just bizarrely, horribly low minimum wage, people work two jobs. They don't have time to cook, things like that. So much more to talk about. Let's follow up with this conversation. But we want to go right now to talk just for a moment about Esteban Arellano, who we had on the air recently and who wrote a little introductory piece in the Santa Fe Food Future report that we've spent today's program talking about.
I just want to read part of what he wrote, but if you look at the food plan on foodpolicy.org,
right, Santa Fe.
SantaFeFoodPolicy.org, you can see the whole thing, but it's I was fortunate to be able to visit his home and his beautiful gardens years ago, and he was just such a committed, amazing person. So he wrote, "The New Mexico landscape is one of many contrasts. Deserts, mountains, meadows, orchards, and gardens, dry as the bones in the cemetery, our final resting place. Part of what defines our carencia, which gives us this sense of place, is our food. Contrary to those who say that there can be no sense of place in today's global experiment, and our food cannot be separated from how we work the land and how we water our crops."
Esteban Arellano. And Lynn Walters is Executive Director of Cooking with Kids. Pam Roy is Executive Director of Farm to Table. And they are both members of the Santa Fe Food Policy Council. We've been talking about planning for Santa Fe's food future. Once again, santafefoodpolicy.org. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too.